Blog Talk Radio.
Sound Health Options on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, along with a lot of other people who act as hosts on our chat. We actually have two chats going on, one at Blog Talk and one at WebEx. If you want to join us on either, and you're only on one, information about this can be found at our site, soundhealthoptions.com under radio, and it will give you information about how to join us on WebEx and watch the show, as well as how to join us on Blog Talk Radio if you've only gotten a WebEx invitation. If you'd like an invitation to our free classes or even our paid classes, software downloads, invitation to our radio show, please just drop me an email at Sherry, Sharry, Edwards, at gmail.com. We're getting some messages in by the chat room. Thank you for the information, George and Colleen both. We're going to talk about cholesterol today, who should be taking cholesterol drugs, if any, and I have a little piece of information here from Dr. McCullough.
First, start off with a peeled prickly pear, and my undercutting board is horizontal.
You were right, George, that's where it's popping up from. This is from Dr. McCullough. We could put that information in the chat room for people so they can go look at this article. And Richard, if that is you on our Blog Talk board, please let me know somehow, either in the chat or something. Don't know how I should let me know. But this is Dr. McCullough, who a lot of you have learned to trust, and he's got a lot of commercials on his site, but this is one of the real ones, McCullough, McCola.com, and he talks about statin drugs and how they're causing memory loss, cataract, sexual dysfunction, anemia. Here are some of the drugs: Avacor, Lipitor, Crestor, Mavacor, Vytorin, Simcor, Zocor. A lot of different drugs, cholesterol drugs, that we're going to be talking about. I have a couple of announcements before we go there and learn about this very special information about how these drugs are killing us. I think another commercial is about to come up here, and I'm going to kill it. We heard over the weekend about a show that Sanjay Gupta did. This was on Friday with a man called Max Little. Now, I don't know much about him. I've been sent some articles from him, and I have tried to get in touch with him, found a couple of emails, even written to his website. I get no information back whatsoever. But he is on Sanjay Gupta's show about something he's invented. He invented a way to look at Parkinson's through a phone call, something we have been doing for years, something we have turned into the National Institute of Health, something the National Institute of Health turned over to Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. I have not stepped out and said to the public, to the news media, I invented this, although other people have, and the Duke Encyclopedia of New Medicine names me as the originator, the pioneer, on page 566, if you want to look it up. But this is a good sign that Max Little is on Sanjay Gupta's show, because it shows that the national media is finally paying attention. Now, I don't much like it that they only have shown this one tiny, tiny little thing about this, because we can do so much with, well, with things like cholesterol that we're going to be talking about today, and heart disease and strokes, and I just, so much of it. And I would like all of it to be sent out. So if you're so inclined, I have put a couple of links in the chat, and you can go watch this interview. And if you would like to inform Sanjay Gupta that there is more to the story and they're only getting one letter of the entire alphabet, maybe they'll come and ask us to do a show. Now, most of the time it's been fear. Fear of the government. Fear of the FDA. That has kept me from stepping out and saying, this is wonderful stuff.
But I still don't have any volume for it.
Somebody has their microphone open. Sherry, I'm closing your microphone. Go look at the top of the chat and go to the tech support, 866-229-3239. 866-229-3239. We ask people to keep their microphones closed unless they want to be on the air. So thank you for that. I don't know how this stuff keeps popping up on my internet. Probably operator error and me just not being able to do what I'm really supposed to be doing here. Okay, so if you can let Sanjay Gupta know, I would appreciate it, and we'll step out. Because I think the shows that we do, I think the work that we do here at the Research Center is incredibly important. And we'd like to bring you information about it. We've been doing some work about cholesterol. And for you practitioners that are here, know that the frequencies for cholesterol is also the frequencies of the trapezius and fibrinogen, which is its connection to heart attacks, cholesterol and heart attack, and it causes scar tissue and joint issues because it's the same frequency as hyaluronic acid. Now, sometimes we bring together, and we have been asked to do more of it, is information about bioacoustically speaking. There are frequencies that are bombarding the earth. And in the spring, it is frequencies about histamine. And so this is why everybody's getting reactions to pollens and that kind of thing. But these frequencies have been measured for years and years and years. And we have been able to follow them, and we know that, like today, the frequency coming to the earth is a G-sharp, and it deals with the frequencies for elbows. Knees. And B6. And B6 deals with carpal tunnel, connective tissue, cholesterol, the use of sulfur. It is the color of sky blue, or its opposite, orange, for you right brain people. So there is always a connection to what is going on. So the frequency for today, bioacoustically speaking, because the body perceives and heals itself using frequency. So today, watch out for extra pain in your knees, your elbows, and your use of B6. You know, what we do bioacoustically is a little like music. There's Celtic music and reggae and classical, heavy metal, country. Each one of us has our own song, our own rhythm. And that's what we look at the research center when you call in and ask us to do your vocal print, or you ask us to work with your doctor, and we're doing more and more of that as we train people. We just had the first training for a technician course for people to open a bioacoustic center with minimal investment of money, knowing that you're going to need this as soon as some of these government programs kicked in. They think that a few thousand people dying is just collateral damage. But if it's your mother or your child, it's much more than collateral damage. And we're trying to put tools and solutions in your hands so that you can have dominion over what's going on in your life. And that's what I love about it, giving you choices. And for those of you who have looked at these statin drugs, this Lipitor and Crestor and all of these, for practitioners, we do have them in your medications list. For next Tuesday, we are going to be actually testing people online, live, and you can watch it using our cholesterol program. So if anyone is interested in doing that, please get in touch with us or go to our site, soundhealthoptions.com, and there will be information there on Happy Hour. It's a very small little piece. On the side, it looks like a little postage stamp. Orange says Happy Hour. You click on that, and you can watch Happy Hour live. The last time we met, we worked on allergies, and I think everybody would like to see what's going on with their cholesterol. So we'll fit as many of you in as we can, and I will check with making the cholesterol software available to the public, because I think this push toward all of these drugs, once you watch this show today, you will want off the drugs. You will never want them mentioned to you, because you'll begin to see what the drug industry is doing and creating. So we've been in touch with Hannah and James Joseph. I've talked to their agent. We want to be able to bring them to you and thought we were going to do that today. But that's not turned out. So we are going to introduce you to their book, Statins and How They're Killing Us, One Cell at a Time. For you practitioners, get some paper and pencil, because they're going to give you some pathways of how all of this is happening. So first, a short introduction, about 4 minutes long, and then we'll be hearing from Hannah Joseph, who's an MD, and her husband, James. You'll see him in this first interview.
How statin drugs really lower cholesterol and kill you one cell at a time. I'm holding this book. It's one of the very first hot-off-the-press books of a publication written by two very dear friends of mine, Hannah Joseph, MD, and James B. Joseph. They've worked 2.5 years to research the statin drug industry, how statin drugs became so pervasive around the world, how they became the number one prescribed medication around the world, what they supposedly do, and what they really do. They're killing us. They're killing us one cell at a time. Now, let me stop right there and say that I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. I don't go off on tangents. I took statin drugs for 7 years of my life. I complained to my physician about aches and pains, pains in the joint, how even before I was 50 years old, how it felt like I was getting old before I should. All things that are commonly complained about now from people that take statins. James, the title of the book says that statins kill you one cell at a time. What does that mean?
Well, exactly what it means is the cell can no longer replicate once the statins are introduced. The idea that they inhibit cholesterol is just a bald-faced lie. They inhibit the reductase and valinate within the cell. When they inhibit reductase, the cell makes more reductase to keep the mevalonate pathway open, because the mevalonate pathway is essential to cell life. The cell dies without mevalonate. They proved it over and over and over in repeated hard science studies that the cell dies. The cholesterol itself does not even leave the body. The cholesterol comes into the cell.
So it leaves the blood.
It leaves the blood and comes into the cell and actually contributes to cell death. It's called apoptosis. It's explained thoroughly in the book. In a few-minute interview, it's a little hard to get into all the details. But these drugs kill you one cell at a time. Your cells, which normally clone themselves and replace themselves, cannot do that under the influence of statins. Some overcome the blockade, so the death is very slow.
Okay.
You feel aging, you feel tired, you feel fatigued, you begin to develop cataracts, you lose your memory. All of those things happen to the people that take statins, and they are largely attributed to aging, because they're administered to people in that middle age group. That's where they're started. And people think, well, I'm just getting old, and I sure am tired of getting old. Well, I'm telling you,
sounds are on the
I was
video.
Yeah, so was I. I never heard of the word reductase. I never heard of the word mevalonate until reading the book. After reading the book, they're very, very clear to me. So as I hear James refer to reductase and the mevalonate pathway. Mevalonate pathway. It's really clear to me now because I've read the book. The mevalonate pathway is, in fact, the very fundamental essence, the very fundamental nutrition at the cellular level. You take away food from the human being dies. Mevalonate pathway is what provides food, nutrition, at the cellular level. And if you interrupt the mevalonate pathway in order to get rid of cholesterol, you also interrupt the nutrition for the cell. It's in the book, folks. It's in the book. How statin drugs really lower cholesterol and kill you one cell at a time.
We are going to be watching a longer video that goes into that pathway. We have provided this to our practitioners on our Sunday class. Someone has asked in chat for us to share with you information about the Sanjay Gupta, how to spell his name for one, and how to watch this video. So I've put this up and also put a link in the chat. Sanjay Gupta, G-U-P-T-A, Gupta. Sanjay, S-A-N-J-A-Y. The mathematician's name is Max Little. The information is being shown here on our WebEx. So if you just put in Max Little and Gupta, G-U-P-T-A, you will likely find it. I have been trying to get in touch with this writer, Jimmy Boyd, and I cannot find his address anywhere. If any of you find it, mevalonate, M-E-L, I think it's V-A-L-O-N-A-T-E, mevalonate. It's in the cholesterol program, George, and several of you who are asking. I'll look this up and post it in the website as we are watching this next film. We really tried for months to get these people on the show, and finally they sent me this link to a show that they thought was really good, and I agree with them. I particularly like the interviewer, Kimberly Jaeger, J-A-E-G-E-R. She has her own show. I wish we could have had them on live so you guys could question them. We will still work on that because we think it's important that you get to ask questions. So I'm going to go ahead and start this video. Actually, I need to run it back because I was playing it. Well,
greetings. My name is Kimberly, and I have a very important interview that I am sharing here that I hope you will share with others because it will save lives. I came in contact with Dr. Hannah Yosef and James Yosef, who have written a very compelling, important book. The title of the book is How Statin Drugs Really Lower Cholesterol and Kill You One Cell at a Time. Their research is phenomenal, and it goes back into the 1950s, and they're going to tell you all about it, but I'm asking for you to please spread this information with those in your lives. About 25% of the population is taking statin drugs, and they are killing you one cell at a time. The website to follow up on this is down below in the description of this video. Also, I'll say it right now, statinsideeffects@webs.com. And also, I welcome you to join me every Tuesday from noon until 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on my blog talk radio show, Living in the Now. Would love to have you join us, where I do lots of other pieces, including interviews like this one. Thank you. Dr. Hannah, how are you? Welcome.
I'm doing well, thanks, Kimberly. How are you today?
Very well. And James, welcome to you also.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. So I don't know who wants to start to tell this story of why you started to do this research. You guys decide who gets to start.
I'll go ahead and intercept, Kimberly. I began this research almost 3 years ago now and practicing as a physician. And I was seeing a lot of side effects from statin use. And just intuitively, I never liked the drug to begin with. And I just had a strong intuition, maybe that's the female part of me that smelled something bad. So I began to do research and more research and more research, and it culminated into our book. There's a little bit more to that story, if I can elaborate,
yes,
too,
please.
Because as I began to uncover some really incriminating things about this drug called statin, I became convinced enough so that when I was interviewing for various clinical jobs, I would tell the interviewer that I refused to prescribe them, and they're so widely used, I wouldn't be hired. Mm-hmm. So the statin use is so widespread now that a physician who refuses to prescribe them is either unemployable or at risk of losing his or her licensure, which just set me even more to the task of uncovering what was going on with these drugs. I knew they were bad.
But you didn't know how bad they were.
I didn't know how bad they were until the evidence started coming together, and I found so much evidence that I just stopped practicing to do full-time research.
Okay.
So it was quite shocking.
I'm a statin victim. Went to the doctor in my late 40s in good health and started taking statins, and my health deteriorated steadily for the next 15 years. When I quit, absolutely refused to take them anymore, it started improving.
Wow.
And today, you know, at 69, I am in excellent health and statin-free. You know, that's a whole story in itself. I had arthritis, diabetes, diverticulosis, the list goes on and on of the ailments that I suffered while attempting to tolerate statins. At one point, I lost the use of my left shoulder. After MRIs and a series of things, they were talking about surgery to replace it. And when I quit taking the statins, the use gradually came back.
Wow.
I was utterly convinced they were poison just from personal experience.
Mm-hmm. So essentially stopping the use, things cleared up?
Cleared up completely, even the diabetes.
Wow.
And that's typical of the experience of most statin users who finally get enough information or suspect the drug because it's the only drug they're taking, that when they stop, they finally feel better, or the bad symptoms just eventually dissipate. That's not always the case, though, with muscle injury. There's studies now that have shown that even after statin use is stopped in the face of muscle destruction, that the destruction doesn't stop. The same thing with cataracts. But generally, the experience is when people sort it out and stop taking the drug, they start improving almost immediately.
Okay, thank you. So Dr. Hanna and James, both, I know that when you were doing the research, because I spoke with both Dr. Hanna and James before doing this interview, that at a point in your research, you became very, very upset with what you were finding. Would you share that part of your story?
Yeah, upset would be putting it mildly, Kimberly. I was sick. And actually, I'll share with you that one of the first discoveries I uncovered that literally I almost threw up and was so sick to my stomach, I had to just stop the work for a few days. And that was, I began to pull up from the public record the early study results when statins at that time were called Compactin and ML-236B. These were experimental drugs which were being used to cause cardiac arrest, if you will, in cells, because they knew that the drug blocked cells from replicating. And they weren't really quite sure why, but it was a time of great excitement because biochemists were learning about the cell reproductive cycle, and by blocking that cycle with a statin, they could find out what they needed to add back to the cell to bring the cell back to life. So when I read, you know, in these reports that this drug called ML-236B or Compactin was killing cells, that's the very words they were using, you know, I couldn't believe it. And on the heels of that, life is so wired to be that what these statins they found were doing to cells is by blocking this enzyme, the cell would make more of the enzyme. The enzyme is called reductase. And it would make more of this enzyme to try to stay alive. The cell has a hardwired reflexive response to overcome the drug-induced blockade, because the cell doesn't want to not be able to recycle, because if it can't replicate itself, it dies.
Mm.
And I knew that this was exciting information from a research standpoint. It's bad news in terms of using this kind of a drug to lower cholesterol and call it something good, because I took an oath to do no harm. That was the first information that I found that just I couldn't believe. It was unbelievable.
So had you been prescribing statins prior to your research, or did you stop before you did your research?
I never prescribed them. In fact, many times I refused to refill them when patients came into my office. From the very beginning, I didn't like the idea of blocking a normal process, especially something so essential to life as cholesterol. Mm-hmm. Vitamin D is made from cholesterol, progesterone, testosterone, thyroid hormone. It's the essence of brain matter and the myelin that protects nerves. I took an oath to do no harm. So even before I knew that this drug killed cells, I had no intention of blocking my patient's cells from making cholesterol. Mm-hmm. So I smelled a rat from the beginning with the drug. I refused to use it. And it caused me a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. It caused me a lot of trouble and lost income. But I didn't care. I just wasn't going to prescribe it. Similar with Ritalin. I would have moms come in with little kids with their hearts pounding out of their chest wanting refills of Ritalin, and I won't prescribe certain medications that I sense do more harm than good.
Right. Well, good for you. Thank you.
Sure.
I'm talking with Dr. Hannah Yosef and James Yosef, and we're discussing their book and research, which is titled How Statin Drugs Really Lower Cholesterol and Kill You One Cell at a Time. And I'm going to be mentioning their website several times, but I want to make sure you have it. statinsideeffects@webs.com. All written out, statinsideeffects@webs.com. All right, so James, now, were you on the statins before you met Dr. Hannah?
Yes, I was.
And did you get off of them before you met her?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
But I was still just very sick and tired. I had uncontrollable diabetes, type 2 diabetes, insulin dependent. The typical patient takes about 15 units of insulin a day. I was taking 120 units a day and not controlling well. I'd had open heart surgery by that time, had the quadruple bypass, and was from which I never recovered until about 2 years ago. I just finally experienced full recovery. Obesity was another side effect that I've, you know, makes sense once you understand how the drug works. It blocks the energy in CoQ10 cycle, and so you can't lose weight if you don't have any energy to burn up the calories. So even starving to death, you can't take off any pounds, or it's very difficult. That discovery that statins kill cells was what made us ask the following questions. You know, what's wrong with this picture? How did this happen? Who brought these things to market? On what basis could that possibly happen? And we discovered so much about the whole industry that it was just bewildering.
Okay, well, are you going to share some of that with us?
Yes, I will. One thing that we discovered was that in the early studies that were done starting in 1948 on the lipid theory, which is the cholesterol theory, that cholesterol causes heart disease, that it was never proven that the whole basis for the creation of a drug to lower cholesterol was wrong. There is no such thing as bad cholesterol. Cholesterol is the stuff of life. It's an isoprenoid that comes down the mevalonate pathway, the same as all of the other things that get blocked that kill cells. So, you know, that was the first thing that was stunning and bewildering, that there was a basic untruth behind the development of a drug to lower cholesterol in the first place. Mm. The only thing that the Framingham study proved, the study started in 1948, was that men between the ages of 25 and 48 might benefit from lowering their cholesterol. That was the only group, and only 2% of those men might benefit.
Wow.
So based on that finding, they prescribed statin drugs to everybody, men, women, and children of any age, if you have a high cholesterol count by some mythical standard that doesn't even need to exist. People with high cholesterol were not dying. If they were over the age of 48 and under the age of 25, and it was never reasonable to give them to women under any circumstance. So that was bewildering.
To add to that, Kimberly, mm-hmm. There's two proven findings or events that indisputably disprove the lipid theory. And one is in the little plaques and blood vessels that cause hardening of the arteries and cardiovascular disease and stroke and heart attack, if those plaques get disrupted and block an essential artery to the brain or the heart, those plaques are filled with oxidized cholesterol, not cholesterol. Mm. So it's not cholesterol that's bad, it's oxidized cholesterol. And that's why we know antioxidants lower the risk of cardiovascular disease, right?
Right.
Well, more effective than taking antioxidants is to avoid oxidizers. So what's an oxidizer? An oxidizer is a chemical that steals electrons, and the lipids like cholesterol that move electrons in our body are easily oxidized because oxidizers are electron thieves. So if you follow my reasoning, we know that oxidation of cholesterol and hardening of the arteries became an increasing health problem at the turn of the 20th century. Well, it just so happens to be that at the turn of the 20th century, around 1908, two things happened, not to our food supply, but to our fluid supply.
Mm-hmm.
We began to chlorinate water, and chlorine is a very strong oxidizer. And as an example of that, if you want to kill a few fish, put them in a tank full of tap water. The chlorine in the tap water will begin to oxidize the cholesterol in the fish scales, and the fish will eventually die. If you want to prevent the death problem, then add a little bit of vitamin C back to the water, and the vitamin C is a strong antioxidant that will bind up the chlorine and the fish will live. The other thing that began to happen at the turn of the 20th century is soda pop became very popular, and there's a very strong oxidizer in most soft drinks, and that's called phosphoric acid. So, and another thing that oxidizes cholesterol is smoke from tobacco smoke. We know that smoking increases the risk of cardiovascular disease. So none of this is rocket science, but whether it's by stupidity or design to suppress this very simple chemical fact has provided the biggest scam in all of medical history to occur by saying that the essence of life, cholesterol, is bad. It's not cholesterol that's bad, it's oxidation that's bad. The other thing that happened to disprove the lipid theory is a drug called MER-29. It was quickly FDA approved in 1959, and it blocked the same pathway as statins, but it blocked the end of the pathway instead of the beginning, so it was actually much safer. And MER-29, like statins, was an almost instant success. There were all kinds of double-blind studies that the manufacturers said proved that this was good, that we needed to lower LDL cholesterol. Doctors were hotly contesting the lipid theory back then, but most began to use the drug. It became very popular. The drug companies pushed it like they did the statins. And one woman who worked for the MER-29 manufacturer blew the whistle because the animal studies had been altered. And the FDA didn't have all of the facts, so an investigation followed, and it ended up with a criminal indictment against the company called William Merrill Company. A couple of the doctors actually were given not jail terms, but they had sentences, and they pleaded no contest, and the drug was pulled off of the market in 1962. But what happened is that people began to lose hair. They had cataracts that did not reverse once they stopped the drug. And there were about 8 years of mass lawsuits where
wow.
People were awarded multi-millions of dollars in civil remunerations for the use of the drug. So that in itself, you would have thought, would have put to bed forever the idea that that LDL cholesterol is bad and the lipid theory is correct. But it was resurrected because there's a lot of money to be made in it.
Yes. We haven't touched on that part of it yet.
Right.
Talking with Dr. Hannah Yosef and James Yosef about how statin drugs really lower cholesterol and kill you one cell at a time. Okay, so they started giving drugs for lowering cholesterol in the 50s. Am I getting that right?
That's correct, 1959.
Okay. And that became popular. And so essentially my whole life, I have been hearing the rhetoric that high cholesterol is bad for me. It's all over the radio and television now because they started advertising drugs, which they didn't always do. I think that only started maybe 10 years ago, if I have that correctly. Do you know?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But to just go off on a tangent a little bit. I don't want to discredit the idea that high cholesterol being bad is completely in error, because elevated cholesterol is a signal that something is wrong. It's just not that high cholesterol is bad and needs to be suppressed. When cholesterol is oxidized by chlorine or phosphoric acid in soft drinks or tobacco smoke, it's destroyed. So what does the body do when something that it needs that's so life essential, it starts to make more of it? And the liver makes cholesterol and releases it into the blood. And if you're constantly drinking tap water or Coca-Cola or smoking cigarettes and constantly oxidizing your cholesterol, the body has to make more of it, so the levels go up. That's
the
why
contrary to that is true, is that one of the early indicators of cancer is low cholesterol.
Hmm.
And that proposition was made by Dr. Cyperstein back in the mid-60s. He observed that cancer, which is runaway growth or malignant growth of mutated cells, uses tons of cholesterol to grow. And people that had one form of cancer or another, and I think they tested either 6 or 8 types of cancer, including leukemia, those cancer patients all had low cholesterol because their body was consuming cholesterol, or the malignant cells were consuming cholesterol at an alarming rate.
Thank you, James. That's interesting to know for sure. So, Dr. Hanna, as far as the oxidation of cholesterol, what can people do to, obviously, don't drink tap water or smoke tobacco or whatever, but what else? I mean, if someone has been drinking tap water and they just don't even know it, or soda, what can they do to help themselves?
Well, the answer to that, and I'm going to expand a little bit on what James said about low cholesterol to make a simple sense of why low cholesterol and cancer are often co-findings. But what people obviously need to do to prevent their cholesterol from being abnormally high is to avoid damage, avoid the oxidizers. And the big three is tap water, soft drinks made with phosphoric acid. There are some soft drinks like ginger ale that are made with citric acid that are safer. Or they can also add milk to a soft drink, like a brown cow with Coca-Cola, that's half milk and half soda. The calcium in the milk will neutralize the phosphoric acid. So there's some little tricks like that can be done. And then certainly avoid smoking. If you're so addicted to smoking that you can't quit or cut back, you would want to add to your regimen a lot of antioxidants like vitamin C. The best way to get vitamin C is not by tablet or powdered form, but fresh juicing every morning. And the juice should be not refrigerated, because refrigeration and heating destroys vitamin C, which is a wonderful antioxidant. So that would be the best recommendation, is to avoid the oxidation in the first place. If you can't, add antioxidants to the diet. And there's all kinds of wonderful antioxidants, but my favorite is vitamin C from fresh squeezed fruit juice. Forget store-bought fruit juice that says it's rich in vitamin C. It can't be. As soon as you pasteurize fruit, the vitamin C is destroyed, and that's why that juice can sit on shelves forever, because the nutrients are basically dead. In response to James's elaboration about low cholesterol being bad, it's easy to understand why low cholesterol and cancer go hand in hand, because the biochemical pathway that cells use to make cholesterol is the pathway that cells make all of the fatty molecules that are required for cellular replication. Blocking that pathway stops cells from replicating. If cells can't replicate, they die. And that pathway goes awry in cancer. The replication goes at an uncontrolled rate, and because cholesterol is required to make cells grow and divide, the pool of cholesterol is quickly depleted. And so very low cholesterol in the blood is a bad sign. But doctors are uninformed of this. It could be signaling something like uncontrolled cellular replication or cancer.
Okay, thank you.
That's been around. That knowledge has been around since the mid '60s when Dr. Cyperstein was studying the cancer connection to cholesterol.
All right. Thanks. So, at this point, Dr. Hannah, you have an audience. They're listening. What's your recommendation to those that have been taking statins? They feel that they're cholesterol levels have been high. They're following their doctor's advice. I'm just going to throw this in. I also happen to know that over the years, the limits of the cholesterol, they've gotten lower and lower, where they are prescribing statins more and more because they've changed the limits. Anyway, so would you address that a bit?
Yeah, my recommendation would be get the book, How Statin Drugs Really Lower Cholesterol, and kill you one cell at a time, and get informed and learn how cholesterol is good for you. And I want to elaborate on that very simply. Cholesterol is so good, it's so vital to life, that every cell in your body has two ways of getting it. Did you know that? Most people don't. I never was taught that as a physician. And many people are very confused about, oh, not only should I lower my cholesterol, I have to avoid cholesterol rich foods. It's not cholesterol in foods that elevates cholesterol. Let me explain. Cholesterol, especially cholesterol that's attached to a low-density protein called LDL cholesterol, is the essence of all of the sex hormones, thyroid hormone, which is required for a healthy metabolism, every cell membrane, brain matter, the protective myelin wrap that keeps our nerves firing correctly. All of these compounds, all of these tissues are made by every cell in the body. Now, doctors think it's the liver cells that make cholesterol. It's every cell. Now we know it's not just the liver. So because every cell needs cholesterol to make all of these life essential ingredients, it has two ways to get it. It first takes it from the blood. If you need to make a chicken dinner, but you can walk across the street to a store that already has it made, you're going to go across the street and get what's already made. And the cells are no different. If they can grab cholesterol from the blood, that's what they do. They snatch it up through receptors on the cell surface and start making all of those wonderful ingredients that make us healthy and alive. Now, if the pool of the cholesterol in the blood is low, cells will start making it through the pathway that statins drop. But first, before making it, they take it from the blood. As the cholesterol levels drop, the liver will take the food that you eat and make more cholesterol and replace it to the blood. Do you see what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the food and cholesterol that makes high cholesterol. It's the liver that takes the food that you eat and replaces the cholesterol that's removed from every cell in your body when it needs to make hormones and vitamin D and cell membranes and brain matter and nerve matter. That simple understanding, which is clearly explained in our book, should make everybody run away from their doctors because they don't know what the hell they're doing. Get informed.
You know, you're talking about one drug here, and I happen to know that there are other drugs that people shouldn't be taking either. You actually happened to mention antidepressants. That's another one that if you get into researching that one, you recognize things like, I have this uncanny memory for statistics, but a couple years ago I was reading an article about how the trials of a lot of the drugs for psychotherapy that 70% of the placebos work just as well as the drug does. So
that's correct. And more than just the placebo effect, what's happened to medicine is it's so much lost its way. The science has been so corrupted, Kimberly, that what's happening with doctors, we're so busy. We have 10 to 15 minutes to see a patient. We look at the symptom, give them a drug that corrects the symptom. If numbers on a piece of paper are out of whack, we give them a drug that blocks the numbers. But you know what the drug companies have become very clever at doing is responding to that idiocy of how medicine is now practiced, this number chasing. What the pharmaceutical companies have become very clever at doing is taking the molecules that may be elevated in the blood and shifting them into the cells. It's just a hat trick. the pills for diabetes, for example, do the same thing. These pills will, and I'm not talking about insulin, I'm talking about the pill form of diabetic medicine, takes the glucose that's elevated in the blood and just shoves it into cells. And as the cells get shoved with more and more glucose, the doctor thinks he's done something because the glucose levels come down in the blood. But meanwhile, the cells get so chock full of glucose that it takes more and more and more and more and more drug to get the same effect. The reason glucose builds up in the blood is because it's not burning, it's not oxidizing, it's not being metabolized inside the cell. You correct that, and that's a nutritional correction, the glucose in the blood will just naturally enter into the cells, and that's why correct diet changes correct elevated glucose. But the drugs that just shift the glucose or the cholesterol, these cholesterol drugs called statins, do not prevent the cells from making cholesterol. That's what doctors think, and we explain that in the book. But all it does, when you learn the science, it just takes the cholesterol from the blood and shoves it into the cells, and when cells get too much cholesterol pushed inside of them, they die. It's called apoptosis.
Thank you. Okay, so as far as patients dealing with their doctors, okay, if they go in, they say, listen, doctor, I'm not going to take this drug anymore. Here, read this book. This is why. And your physician says, well, then I'm not going to treat you. How do you deal with that one?
James, you want to answer that? Because you've been in that spot before.
Yeah, I had a physician threaten to fire me as a patient
right.
at one point because I was uncooperative with his recommendations. I also had another just dreadful experience, which was that my doctor was concerned that I get my cholesterol lowered, and I was, you know, convinced like everyone is that that was very important, and he prescribed me a new drug that didn't have that usual suffix on the name, the OR suffix, you know, Zocor, Crestor, all of those, and told me it wasn't a statin. Well, that was when my shoulder went bad and I was losing the use of my left arm. And I finally asked my pharmacist, could that be this drug? And she said, well, it's a statin. Yeah, of course it could. You should see your doctor, you know, or you should talk to your doctor. I did. I called him some names. So, yeah, this is, you know, from a personal experience, the statins were just made my life hell for about 10 or 15 years.
Okay, well, so how do you deal with the doctor?
I'm not sure that there's a way. They're brainwashed and incredibly arrogant, I'm sorry to say, but, you know, the biggest roadblock to learning is thinking you already know, and they think they already know, so they are even unwilling to investigate.
I'd like to add to that. You know, if you boil down all of human behavior, there's two things that drive everything we do and everything we say. It's love or it's fear. And medicine now is fear-driven. Doctors are afraid. They're afraid of losing their licensure. They're afraid of not following the standard of care. Everybody can be singing off-tune off of the wrong sheet of music, but if everybody's singing off-tune together, they feel safe. So anybody that confronts their doctor needs to understand that the arrogance, the belligerence, the ignorance, all of that is rooted in fear. And love is what casts out fear every time and overcomes it. So I would recommend that people, it's hard to be loving when you're hurting and you've been poisoned, and that's what this drug does, is it poisons you. It's a mycotoxin from a disease-causing fungus. And that's a whole other story in and of itself. It takes many chapters to explain that in the book and explain the chemistry. But nobody is in a mood to be loving when they've been poisoned. But it is love and kindness and bravery, all of those virtues that will get the word out to physicians and other people. And the best way to do that is to pass the book along or recommend it or give it as a gift and let the truth shine. It may take years. It may never happen. It'll only happen if we do it in a way to inform one another, including the physicians, so so that we can help one another. This drug is killing people. It's a serious matter.
Very serious. Thank you, Dr. Hannah Yosef and James Yosef. We're talking about their book and research, which is titled How Statin Drugs Really Lower Cholesterol and Kill You One Cell at a Time. Also, the website to go to follow up on this with lots of information is statinsideeffects@webs.com, WEBS.com, statinsideeffects@webs.com. Just kind of flipping through this, I don't think we've talked about all of the symptoms of the statins, such as I'm going through, you know, I see birth defects and lung damage and hair and skin. Why don't you talk about what happens with these drugs more?
Well, to expound on that, I want to explain a little bit how the drug works as simply as I can. And I think I can do it in a way that will make sense to most of the listeners. Is, as I explained earlier, cholesterol is so important that cells have two ways to make it. They have little doors on the surface of the cell called cholesterol receptors that pull cholesterol out of the blood. And what this drug essentially does is it forces cells to make more receptors. So the cholesterol just shifts from the blood and gets foisted into the cells of tissue beds. One of the side effects of that is destruction of muscle cells, and it basically makes muscle cells just explode, and it also makes the muscle kind of flabby because the muscle cells are getting filled and filled and filled with cholesterol. Doctor isn't checking your muscle cells or tissue cells for cholesterol levels; he's testing the blood,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay.
So weak and tired muscles. Is a problem. Eventually, if too much cholesterol gets pushed into the muscle cells rupture by a process called apoptosis. Too much cholesterol inside cells is toxic to cells. They just explode. And the danger with that happening in muscle cells is muscle cells release a protein that gets trapped in the kidneys, and this can cause death by kidney failure, acute renal failure, or kidney failure, because the protein that's in muscle cells just clogs up the kidneys. And so if you start seeing dark urine and pain in the lower sides of the back where the kidneys are located, that's a very ominous sign and symptom of pending and possible renal failure, which can result in death. That's how these drugs not only kill cells, but kill the entire person fairly quickly. Some of the other symptoms are a little different, and they're due to cholesterol being blocked and that loss of eyesight. Many people begin to lose clear vision. Those are cataracts that are being formed. Cholesterol is an important part of the lens of the eye, and this was the main injury of the MER-29 drug in 1959 to 1962. Many people had cataracts and even went blind. And then other symptoms are nerve damage. The tiniest nerves in the body are the ones that are part of the hearing mechanism and the balance mechanism. So loss of balance, loss of hearing is an ominous sign. If you begin to lose muscle function, that can be not necessarily muscle damage, but damage to the nerves that innervate the muscle, because the sheath wrapped around the nerve is mostly cholesterol. Oh my goodness! There's every cell in the body needs cholesterol, so the symptoms are so wide and varied. But I'm giving to you the most common
mm-hmm.
problems, which is visual problems, maybe balance problems. Many people have difficulty thinking because the brain is mostly cholesterol. So psychiatric changes, emotional changes, the thyroid hormone is important and is derived from cholesterol. So many people start feeling cold or extremely hot. The symptoms are so widespread that the connection between the drug and the symptoms is rarely made. The cholesterol-lowering drug in the 1950s, MER-29, had way fewer side effects because it only blocked the final step in this pathway. So all of the many side effects that you see with statins didn't occur. It was much easier to attribute the problem to the drug, and that's one of the reasons why the disaster and the fallout from this drug is so widespread, because the symptoms is varied as cellular function.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Again, I'm talking with Dr. Hannah Yosef and James Yosef. Hannah, what would you want to be sure is included in this interview at this point that we haven't talked about, or if something you would like to re-stress?
James, do you have any thoughts there? I've covered a lot of things that were important to me, especially the fact that cholesterol is good, the cells need it, the cells have two ways to make it, that the drug is a hat trick. You know, I think I would press that point, if anything, is the fact that this drug does absolutely nothing. It does not lower the overall cholesterol balance in the body. It just shifts it. It's a hat trick. It just moves cholesterol from the blood into cells, and it's a very, very, very dangerous chemical magic act. It's deadly.
We found something interesting as we researched the book. We kept asking ourselves what to us were the obvious questions. How could this happen? How could such a poison be foisted off on 200 million people worldwide? And research kept leading us to the NIH, the FDA, the drug companies, in particular Merck, that got the first statins approved. And we gradually uncovered an insane conspiracy to bring them to market. And we documented all of that in the book. In other words, we named names, dates, places, exactly what happened that could bring such a poison to market. And it actually started as a race between the United States and Japan to be the first ones to get to market. And they used that race as a justification for jamming everything through and getting it all approved. And then they corrupted the entire process. It was stunning to discover, and it is all a matter of public record, and it is all documented in the book.
James, thank you. Kimberly, that's probably the most important fact that can be presented in this interview, and I can't believe I'd forgotten that. In 1980, the drug company that was developing the first statin, called Compactin, or ML-236B, stopped the development and the testing because half of their experimental dogs had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a cancer of the intestines, and it was called a lymphoma, which makes sense because the intestines are the first organs to be affected by the drug, and the lymphocytes, that are the white blood cells that line the intestines and protect us from infection, are very cholesterol-rich. So after 50% of the dogs developed cancer, Sankyo in Japan stopped the development, and when Merck got wind of it, they stopped the development of the first statin called Lovastatin as well. But the inventor of the first statin in Japan left his company and went to another university and began to perform clandestine tests on humans. He published those results in America, and then Merck got wind of it, the NIH got wind of it, and then for the public record is all of the evidence to show that they didn't want Japan to get this drug to market before the United States, and human studies very quickly began. They were done in Dallas, Texas. And then the story goes from there. So both companies in the East and in the West stopped the development in 1980. Now, when Merck stopped in 1980 on the heels of Japan stopping the drug development, you have to ask the question, why did they stop, right? They had spent millions of dollars developing it. Why would they stop so quickly unless they had their own concerns? And for the public record, again, there's plenty of evidence to show that they knew it was killing rabbits in days to weeks. They were having all kinds of problems. Another company that was developing the drug stopped after their monkeys were dying. So what they did is release just a less toxic form of the drug, so mm-hmm. that the connection between the effects and the drug are not made.
Wow.
you remember Bakal? Bakal was removed from the market in the 1990s. It was boasted to be the most potent statin on the market, and so potent that you could pull tugboats. That's what their advertisement showed, someone swimming and pulling a tugboat, and it was so potent that it killed you too fast. And so the connection between the drug and death was made, and most people died from kidney failure, from their muscle cells exploding and destroying the kidneys. And so Bayer, which made Bakal, voluntarily removed it from the market because it was indisputable that the drug was what was causing the death. Now everything is so convoluted and so confused that few, if any, make the connection. Stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the thing is that I, at this point I've heard so many of these stories from different perspectives. And, you know, it just that... Boy, I'm so looking forward to us going back to Mother Nature.
Yes, me too.
I'm looking forward to that.
In fact, when James are in social circles, I ask him not to present me as a physician. I'm embarrassed at what's happened to my once honored profession. It's awful.
Yeah,
we're doing more harm than good.
Right. Right, yeah, and we could talk about a lot of those issues, but we won't. We'll stick to this one.
One of the things
the drug companies use as a tactic to get their drugs approved is that the benefits outweigh the risk. And today it's we're at a point where the benefits of seeing your doctor are outweighed by the risk of what he might prescribe to you.
Well, I'm going to tell you that after everything that I've learned in the job that I do, going back 2 years ago, I refuse to have anybody test me for anything. You know, I mean, I have to have insurance, which I think is a crime. In Massachusetts, it's a law. And so thousands and thousands of dollars are going off to the health industry, and my family is very healthy, and we have no choice.
It's a racket. That's a racket.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. And
you know what the best test is how do you feel?
Right.
No money in that, is there?
We have a friend who is taking care of his aged mother. She will soon turn 95, and she refuses to see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
She's still lucid. She still writes her own checks. She still gets around. She's doing fine. There has to be some connection.
Right. I've finally gone that route.
I've considered authoring another book that the title would be Run for Your Life. Your doctor doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah. Well, I'm on that page, so I'm on that page.
Okay.
At this point, you know, I'm here to serve you guys, so let me know if there's something else you want to be sure to include.
James,
well,
you're full of words.
The stunning things that we found along the way, they weren't exactly serendipitous because we were inspired in a way to go looking for them. It just, so much just would not make sense. We could not imagine. We had no mental equivalent, number one, for the $140 billion per year that are made on these drugs, $140 billion with a B. We could not imagine the kind of force and corruption that drug companies could bring to bear. It's not just lobbying. They actually are allowed to hire people that work within the National Institute of Health and within the FDA as consultants. We found Merck consultants that served on the FDA committee to approve the drugs. We sent away under the Freedom of Information Act for the minutes to the approval meeting for the very first statin. It was appalling. It was just appalling. We were stunned over and over and over again. We just couldn't believe it. We would have to stop for a few days and think about it and digest it before we could even sit down to write again about what really happened. And it's all in the book, of course. But
the chairman of the FDA approval committee was not an FDA employee. It was a Merck consultant. And he was constantly setting the stage for everyone with comments like, well, it looks like we're going to approve this drug. And when incriminating information came forward, like 12 people who died in the first lovastatin human trial done by Merck, he just skipped right around it and dismissed it. It was just appalling.
Yes, amazingly appalling. I have a recommendation. I know that you use some of her work in your book, is Kay Carlson. Her book is Diary of a Legal Drug Dealer. She's been on the program, but I wanted to make sure that those who are interested in this topic that they know about and are reminded of that book.
Now, there's a lady, a very erudite scientist in California, Beatrice Gollum, who's doing a great number of studies on the statin-injured folks and publishing on a regular basis. She's quite wonderful. Dwayne Gravelin, the former astronaut and MD, has written some good stuff. There's wonderful stuff by Uffe Ravenskov. Am I saying that right, Hannah?
Uffe Ravenskov of Sweden.
Yes.
Things, which is the International Network of Cholesterol Skeptics.
There are people out there that are aware, that are good scientists, that are reporting, and the drug companies have so much clout and so much money that they can mount enormous efforts to discredit these people and quiet them down and keep the knowledge from getting out to the general public.
Keep the spin going.
You've got $140 billion a year. You can do a lot of harm before you get caught up with. We just want to catch up with them and put an end to it.
And once again, thank you so much for doing that. So you want to share your good news that you shared with me before we did the interview about Judge Fine?
Oh, yes. That's wonderful news. Judge Fine wrote the expose on the MER-29 drug, the very first form of a statin drug that hit the market back in 1959. When it came off from the market in 62, he did a little reverse engineering and put together the whole package on how that drug was brought to market. And it's called The Great Drug Deception. We have been recently authorized to republish his work. And we're very, very excited about it because it's such a good read, and it's so important as background for what it is that we're dealing with today. This is not new stuff. These folks at the drug companies have been conniving and controlling and manipulating and lying and withholding since way back in the 50s. So,
what allowed injured people from the MER-29 drug to prevail was a grand jury investigation that proved that the drug manufacturer had withheld animal study data that demonstrated cataract formation and muscle loss and weakness and nerve damage and all of the things that are also seen with statins. But the main legal problem that the drug company could not contest was that they had failed to warn. This was the same as in the tobacco litigation. And I would recommend for anybody who's been injured by a statin to bring our book to their attorney and to encourage the legal representative or attorney to not pursue an injury case, because the drug companies know how to fight on that battleground. The main effort that will likely prevail is the same as big tobacco, and that is failure to warn. The drug companies knew that blocking mevalonate kills cells. Cholesterol comes from mevalonate, and mevalonate makes all of the compounds that a cell needs to replicate. Blocking mevalonate kills cells. That is the argument. If someone was informed that blocking mevalonate would kill their cells, they most likely would not have taken it. And it's easy to prove from the evidence that's in our book that the drug developers clearly knew that the drug blocked mevalonate and killed cells, because it was being used as a very interesting experimental drug during that time. So the argument before any judge and jury is, you know, this drug blocked my cell cycle, it killed my cells, the drug company knew it, I was not informed, end of report. It's called failure to warn, fraud. obfuscation. Of course people were injured. Nobody has to prove they were injured. You can't block mevalonate and not hurt somebody. Everybody is hurt by this drug. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's very interesting because one of the things, I did not vaccinate my children, and because I knew of the dangers of vaccination. And they do warn you with those. You have to sign a paper for vaccination.
Right. And do you think anybody would take a statin drug to lower their cholesterol if they were warned
right.
that the drug would prevent their cells from replicating? They'd say, are you nuts?
Do you think
the doctors would have ever prescribed it? They'd say, are you nuts?
Well, people get vaccinations for their children, and they sign a form saying, so.
That's true. Yeah, we're pretty brainwashed, aren't we? We've lost our ways as a race. We're killing one another and our children.
Right.
That's another whole topic, you know, the tripyrenol or the mercury. I'm saying that wrong, aren't I, darling?
Yeah, you're talking about the mercury adjuvant, and it's that the name of that is escaping me as well. But yeah, it's the mercury preservative in immunizations. That's obviously toxic to brain tissue. That's no brainer.
Right. Like I said, and you have to sign a waiver on that one. So.
And your children can't go to school if they're not vaccinated.
Well, yes, they can.
Well,
good. And there are mercury-free
some states that are trying to block that.
Yeah, I know. That's a like
well,
I said.
Well, and again, the fear mongers have people all worried that the kids that aren't getting vaccinated are going to spread diseases to their kids, and the fact remains that it's not true.
Right.
In fact, some kids get very sick after a vaccination, and doctors are taught to say, oh, they don't really have the illness. That's just the symptoms of the illness. And if you're giving someone a live virus, that's more than just symptoms of an illness. You know, I'd be concerned about my kid being around a kid that's sick after taking a vaccine.
Right.
So there's so much misinformation and fear-mongering that's going around. And if you go back and you look at how vaccines were developed, they're so experimental. They were contaminated with infectious tiny cell wall deficient bacteria that were found to cause cancer. And that's a whole other subject. And it's just bad science, bad juju. I'm ashamed to say I'm a medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
It's doing more harm than good.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw one at you guys because, like I said, where I sit, things come. And one of the most incredible other discoveries that came my way a couple months ago is a book titled Sunscreen's Biohazard, Treat as Hazardous Waste. So you might want to check out sunscreenbiohazard.com. So this book reads like your book, just so you know. Essentially, the sunscreens are killing the reefs. And not only that, but more than 50% of the population is vitamin D deficient. You know, another thing, the sun is good for us, and it's the best way to produce vitamin D.
Do you know why there's so much vitamin D deficiency, Kimberly? What is vitamin D made from?
The
cholesterol.
Sun.
So 25% of the adult population in first world countries on the planet are taking a drug that blocks vitamin D. Vitamin D is essential for an intact immune system.
It's just
nuts.
So the statins are affecting vitamin D also, you said?
Of course.
Okay.
Vitamin D is made from cholesterol.
Okay.
Yes. So what are doctors doing? You know, are they giving a cholesterol drug? And here's some vitamin D. Let's just not block the vitamin D in the first place.
Right.
CoQ10 is another one of the molecules that comes down the mevalonate pathway that's needed to make energy. Some doctors have learned about that, and they say, here, take a statin and some CoQ10. That still is absolutely wrong advice. Another thing that the drug blocks prevents DNA from replicating, and they don't give you back that compound called isopentenyl adenine, you know, so that your DNA can replicate. Just don't block these life essential molecules in the first place. It's all bad, wrong science that's designed only to make money and do a lot of harm. The more harm the drug causes, the more side effects it induces, so more drugs get sold. And the spin continues.
Judge Stein made an observation in his book that the lipid theory was dead, and it needed to be dead and stay dead. It just you know, the fact that it got resurrected by a few folks is really a frightening.
It got resurrected by the National Institutes of Health by a bunch of lipid scientists who are going to prove themselves right whether it killed us all or not.
And bottom line, it's about money.
Bottom line, it's about money. And you know what that means? It means we're all in hell. To me, the definition of hell is that which destroys and breaks down. And if you want a definition for heaven, it's that which builds up and pulls together. And you don't have to die to go to hell, and you don't have to die to go to heaven. You know, you can be in hell in what you say and what you do and what you put into your body and what it's doing to yourself. Everything that tears apart and destroys and robs from ourselves and from our fellow human being puts us in a state of chaos, destruction, and that's what fire does. Fire destroys. You want to be in heaven? Then build up, love, do what promotes health and promotes life. You want to know what heaven is? Heaven is pro-life. If you want to know what hell is, it's pro-destruction. And this drug is hell. Is that too philosophical? I mean, I'm breaking off into an unseen realm, but that's the bottom line.
No, that's totally in line with this program.
Okay, good.
Feel free to go as deep as you want, or as high, I should say.
Well, I like to take the axe to the root of the tree, and that's getting to the root of the tree for anybody that would be afraid of telling a loved one or a friend or confronting their doctor, get out of hell. Don't be afraid. Be brave. Take a stone and throw it at the giant's forehead. Do the right thing. Love yourself. Love your fellow man. You know, ascend.
Right.
Turn to the Creator. He's pro-life. If you're doing something or your doctor's doing something that's pro-death, then confront it. Beat it.
Yeah.
Snuff it out. Be brave. What's the worst thing you can do? Die? As long as you do something good for your fellow man, you move on.
If all else fails, sue the sons of bitches.
Yeah, there you go. If you don't want to do it for yourself, then do the lawsuit for your fellow man. Set a precedent. Write to us. We'll be your cheerleaders.
You know, essentially, here we are in 2012, and this is my take on it, is that we're at the time of the great revealing. I mean, all these things that have been used to keep us in control and manipulated in the name of greed and possession, etc., are starting to show up and be revealed. And
yeah.
There are lots of them. And I thank everyone who's taken their role to reveal what they have been, what their mission has been to reveal. So I thank you, you know, both.
That's wonderful, Kimberly. Yeah, choose whom you're going to serve, right? Life
mm-hmm.
or death.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven or hell, destruction or production.
You know, and essentially there are so many things that are going on that have been used to manipulate us. You know, we have to not curse them, or we have to start taking personal responsibility for ourselves. So, for example, me deciding, you know, I'm just not going to have them do any more tests on me.
Right.
You know, my cholesterol test. I mean, I knew that before I came across this. Now it's like, please. You know, because it was a little elevated the last time I did do a test. And so they started saying Lipitor, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Absolutely no way am I. I knew intuitively also. So.
Well, you know, in the Old Testament scriptures, there's something described as the Valley of Decision. And you know what? I think that's why we're here. We're here to, you know, if you look at the life form on the planet, we're the ones that have the divine connection and have that conscience. It was conscience that actually drove me to do the research on statins. My conscience would not allow me to prescribe them. Well, that you can't explain that. That's
right.
The God connect. And that's what makes us human. That's what makes us connected to the divine. And it's a wonderful place to be, to make that choice to come against the darkness and to come against things that destroy and don't help.
Absolutely. So thank you both for your piece of the pie.
Thank you, Kimberly. That's good stuff. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much, Kimberly. We appreciate you a lot.
Oh, I appreciate you, and I just wondered if there's anything you want to say in closing.
James, you close.
The book that we wrote, How Statin Drugs Really Lower Cholesterol and Kill You One Cell at a Time, is an inspired work. It was written for a secular market, but the reveals that are in it actually came from pure inspiration. We would have a thought that had no connect to anything that we were doing, and we would run it down, and there was the literature out there in the public record that proved the thought true. They blocked the Mevalonate pathway came from that kind of inspiration. The conspiracy came from that kind of inspiration. We first thought it was a good old boy network. We just didn't have a mental equivalent for somebody bringing something so deadly to market. And our mental equivalent had to change. Our paradigms had to shift. And all of that was done by divine inspiration. We didn't do this on our own. And that's the nuts and bolts of it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you, Kimberly.
Much love to you guys. And keep up the good work. And I'm doing my part to get this out there. And it's going to take a little time, but we can do it.
We'll keep doing it. Use the law of attraction. Thank you, Kimberly. Much love to you, too.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sharing this with others. This information will save lives. Thank you.
Let's try that. Kimberly. Jeegerhannahyoseph. Joseph. There it is. Okay, I will also put this in the Blog Talk chat. So I'm going to grab this link, copy it, and put it in the chat here, and then I put it in the chat. Well, thank you for being here. I wanted to leave you with a piece of advice, and I don't even know if it's appropriate now, but I'm going to share it anyway. If you want to do something, you will, and if you don't want to do it, any excuse will do. And your task is to have the courage to stand behind that decision and not waste other people's time by telling him that you're going to do something when you don't have any intention of doing it. So just thought for the day. Hope I can be better when we get together for happy hour on Tuesday evening. And I certainly appreciate you being here.